It is a state capitol report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Republican lawmakers who control the legislature's finance committee are in the final weeks of crafting its two-year state budget plan, with Joint Finance Committee expected to finish revising Democratic Governor Tony Evers' budget by the end of this month and forward it on to the full Assembly and Senate for floor votes. Call in with a question or comment about the budget, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Wisconsin Public Radio's Anya von Wagtendonk is state capitol reporter, and Sean Johnson is capitol bureau chief. Anya and Sean, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Thanks.
Well, Sean, let's start with you. State aid to local governments shared revenue. Last week, we saw Republican leaders and Governor Evers reach an agreement over sharing money from tax collections with municipalities and schools. What are the highlights of this deal?
This is, you know, we've been talking about this as kind of a deal for a while, but at every step, I'm kind of amazed that Republican leaders and the governor have come together on something as kind of monumental as this. They are talking about pretty wholesale changes to the way that local governments are funded going forward. They're carving off 20% of the state's sales tax to pay for local communities. That means as the sales tax grows, they're going to get some of that revenue. And then the deal, you know, the kind of the revised deal that they announced last week is that this pot of money that's going out to these local communities, every community under 110,000 people will see an increase of an increase of 20% in their funding at minimum. Some will see more, but that will be a floor. And that was up from the original deal they came out with was 10%. Then they upped it to 15%. Now they're up to 20%. And then I think also the key provisions that they announced last week have a path forward for the city of Milwaukee specifically to deal with a fiscal cliff that, you know, leaders there have been warning is on the horizon if there was no state action.
We're going to get to Milwaukee in just a moment here. But when you say wholesale changes, how restricted or unrestricted will this funding stream be for local cities and towns and counties to pay for things?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess when I say wholesale changes, I mean, if you just look at the way that local governments have been funded for the last 20 years, we commonly refer to it as shared revenue. But the state funding to local governments has actually it's been at a flat level, and it's actually been cut three times in the last 20 years. So think about how much expenses have grown in the last 20 years, and their actual funding has been cut three times. So now you've got they're actually going to see an increase that could grow. But you're right, there are a lot more restrictions on this funding than the state used to impose on money that it spent on local governments. So, you know, these communities would have to spend it on expenses like police, firefighters, court expenses. There would be very specific restrictions on the city of Milwaukee. Milwaukee could not spend any of this revenue on the streetcar there, for example. Diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts around the state would not be eligible for this funding. You know, any number of ways where local governments would get the funding, but only if they spend it on these expenses that the legislature and governor have said is where this funding should go.
And Anya, I want to bring you in at this point because this has been really a critical juncture for Milwaukee. One of the biggest sticking points in the negotiations was over proposed sales taxes for the city and county. What has been resolved there?
Right. So Milwaukee leaders repeatedly asked to be able to raise the tax just through a standard vote by elected leaders. So in the county board and the Milwaukee Common Council, because they said they couldn't get the tax with the referendum, and they will desperately need that tax. And so under this deal, the legislature is going to allow the sales tax hike without making voters weigh in, so without a voter referendum. If it's passed by the respective councils, then the city tax could go up by 2% and the county's tax by 0.4%.
talking about state politics with WPR's Anya Van Wagtendonk and Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson. And you can join in on the upcoming state budget, what you see, questions you have about it, 800-642-1234. Anya, what would the ability to raise the sales tax mean for government-funded services in Milwaukee, as Sean mentioned, this fiscal cliff?
Right. Milwaukee leaders warned about substantial cuts that they would need to make to core services, specifically to police and firefighting. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson said that hundreds of police officers would need to be cut. Milwaukee firefighters have also said they're already working understaffed, and so there could be cuts there, and potentially also cuts to the library service, the TikTok famous Milwaukee Library. Mm-hmm. So Milwaukee leaders say that, you know, this new tax will bring in tens of millions of dollars in annual revenue, which would avoid having to cut those core services. It's also worth noting, I'm referring to Milwaukee's elected leaders, but many major kind of private industries in Milwaukee also supported the sales tax. And that includes Milwaukee's equivalent of a Chamber of Commerce and even the Milwaukee Bucks.
In terms of the what the shared revenue funds can go toward, Milwaukee also must meet demands with this funding. What are some of those in terms of public safety?
Yeah, as Sean mentioned, Milwaukee had a couple of strings attached to their dollars. So that includes maintaining a certain level of police funding, as well as bringing police back into public schools. This was an area of some contention among activists who had school resource officers removed from the schools several years ago. And under this deal, those would return to the public schools.
Turning now to education, Sean, which is also part of this deal. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss had opposed allowing sales tax hikes in the city and county of Milwaukee without referendums. What would Republicans get from the deal that earned their support?
Yeah, Voss actually described this as the reason that he went from a position of, you know, we're done negotiating to, you know, we're back at the table. And there he was at a press conference, you know, announcing this deal last week. There is an agreement. It looks like it's going to be in a separate bill, where the state is going to increase the amount spent per pupil on private voucher schools. So it's going to go up for kids in private voucher schools in grades K through 8 by about $1,100 per student, about $3,000 per student for those in high school. Charter schools would see an increase of about $1,700. And then per pupil funding for Wisconsin's special needs scholarship program would go up by about $1,600. Voss pointed to those dollar figures as, you know, they made the deal for him. And
what's in it for Evers?
Evers is, as far as school funding goes, and we don't know exactly what they're going to agree on in terms of a dollar amount that the state is going to spend, but they reached an agreement that between state and local funding, they're going to see an increase of $1 billion in, you know, it's like revenue limit authority, basically a combo of state and local spending there. We'll see the fine print of that this week, likely when the legislature passes its schools budget, but they, you know, it's not going to be flat funding from the state. There will be an increase for public schools. And per pupil, you're going to be looking at $325 per year in each of the next 2 years for public schools.
Okay, getting down into the details there. Let's go to Crash in Milwaukee. Hi, Crash.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What would you like to bring up?
Well, I would just like to say, we're the taxpayers. And so if the money, we give money to the state should not tell us how that money should be spent. We're in the communities, and we are the people who can decide what our needs are and how to meet them best, especially the city of Milwaukee. Because as a community, the city of Milwaukee generates more revenue for the state than any other community. We deserve to spend it on the fixing our problems as we see them.
Crash, thank you for that. Sean, do you hear that sentiment elsewhere?
I think it's especially acute in Milwaukee because there are so many restrictions that are specific to Milwaukee. You know, there's restrictions on the funding all over the state in terms of what the money can be spent on broadly, but they get really into the fine details with Milwaukee. What Republicans say about why they're doing this is, hey, we're giving you the opportunity or the permission to have this big sales tax increase. That's not something Republicans would normally do. 2% for the city, 0.4% for the county. And so that's how they view the trade-off. I think you're going to see potentially some Milwaukee Democrats vote for this bill because the sales tax provisions are so important to them, even though they don't like the restrictions elsewhere.
WPR's State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson and Capitol reporter Anya Van Wagtendonk get us up to speed as the state's budget writing committee takes action on major parts of the two-year spending plan in the final weeks of budget season. There's room to talk about budget priorities and the process at hand. Call in with a question or a comment, 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The state budget covers a two-year period starting July 1, and that budget crafted by the Republican-controlled Joint Finance Committee, it requires approval by both houses, Assembly and Senate. That will send the spending plan back to Governor Tony Evers, who can use his partial veto powers to rewrite the budget plan. Raise a question about the budget. Share your thoughts. Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sean Johnson and Anya Van Wagtendonk cover the state capitol and politics for WPR. Anya, talking about new employees, Governor Evers and Attorney General Josh Call sought to add employees at key state agencies in the next budget, and Call had requested 16 new positions at the state crime lab. What are Republicans supporting?
Right. So Josh Call, and it should be noted, his Republican challenger from last fall, Eric Toney, called for increased staff for state crime labs, things like toxicologists and DNA analysts. They argue that this would allow the labs to process evidence faster, which speeds up the entire investigative or court process. Republicans who control the budget writing committee last week approved three positions for those crime labs, so a significantly lower number.
And Anya, the attorney general had been funding the five-year-old Office of School Safety with federal dollars. He had requested to keep funding it with state dollars, which Republicans rejected. What will happen to this office?
According to Joshua Call, that'll gut the office. It's sort of unclear whether there will be other avenues for revenue, but he was asking for a significant amount of funding, and the approved amount was $0.
Sean, what reasons did Republicans cite for not continuing to fund it?
They said when they're asked about it on Friday that there's a base amount basically in the budget that will fund, I think it's around four state employees to run that office. And so they didn't want that, you know, the office has been expanding its duties over the last couple of years using federal funds. And they said they didn't want to basically backfill every program in state government that had been using federal funds over the last couple of years. So there are employees in DOJ that will be available to work on this office. Not nearly as many as the attorney general wanted, though, when it comes to school safety.
And let's turn also to Department of Safety and Professional Services, another office seeking additional staff. Anya, Governor Evers had requested new employees to help DSPS eliminate its backlog in issuing job licenses. Where are Republicans at in on this idea?
Yeah, this is an area of significant and ongoing divide between Democrats and Republicans, many years in the making. Democrats say that backlog is because of low staffing and underfunding. Republicans say it's because of bad leadership and mismanagement. So Evers called for about 80 staffers for the department in his budget, and Republicans on the budget committee approved about 18, about a dozen of which are for those license-related positions, so it would be dedicated to improving the backlog. Republicans just say that they don't want to throw money at an agency that's not doing a good job until it can prove that it's turning things around. And Democrats say it can't turn things around without proper staffing and funding.
They also seems to get their license application processing software upgrade that was, over $4 million. That seems to be a green light.
That's right. And Republicans in the Assembly last week also approved a slate of bills that are aimed at kind of some policy solutions, adding some additional requirements to the agency. Again, Democrats pushed back against that, saying that if you make policy changes, again, you need the money and the staff to implement them. But so these changes are coming through, and we'll start to see, I think, over the next couple of months to what extent they are they make a significant difference in the agency.
And Sean, the DSPS audit, is that still underway from earlier this year?
Yeah, we have not heard the results anything of that audit yet, right? They ordered it, but that's ongoing.
Talking about state politics with WPR State Capitol reporter Anya Van Wagtendonk and State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, you can join in with your questions about the budget, priorities, what you see for your community, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So last week, Republican Representative Mark Bourne, co-chair, Joint Finance Committee, was on our program. And here's Bourne on funding for the State Department of Corrections.
We're also going to make some significant investments in corrections and trying to help staff those facilities in a safe way.
Anya, what decisions were made on funding Department of Corrections?
Yeah, so this is another area Evers pushed for significant wage hikes in his budget. Notably, the budget committee has not yet taken up the issue of wage hikes. It was kind of expected that they might at their hearing on the Department of Corrections last week. They said that they'll take up compensation issues at a specific separate session. And so what they ended up approving funding for was kind of a smaller portion of the budget, things like covering increasing inmate costs, which are just going up due to inflation and increased healthcare costs and other reasons, overtime pay for staff. They launched a few new positions within the department, and they're also paying into a medication-assisted drug treatment program. We're still waiting to see what might happen with potential pay increases for corrections workers.
Okay, so details still to be worked out there. Give us a status update then, Anya. Where are we at? What parts of the state budget are yet to be reviewed by Joint Finance Committee?
Yeah, we have a busy week ahead of us. This week, the Joint Finance Committee is going to take up health, children and family services, military affairs, transportation, and then the very small portion of the budget that goes to education. That is a joke. That's a very large portion, including the UW system. So Sean and I have a lot of research papers to be reviewing this afternoon.
Sean, as you have that institutional memory going back years and years, how does this budget season compare or contrast to ones in past years or past decades?
I think the one thing that you look back on this one and remember is that there was just a lot of money to work with. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of creates new issues, I guess, in terms of how to spend it. You're also seeing kind of the way that Evers and Republicans are working together is a little different this time around. This shared revenue or this local government funding bill that we've spent a lot of time talking about, they pulled that out of the budget. And it's weird. They don't even actually have any money in that bill because they want to prevent Evers from even using his partial veto pen to change it. Hmm. So there's just a little, maneuvering there in terms of how they're working together. But I think big picture, you're not going to remember that so much as you're going to look back at this session as like the session they had all the money. And what did they do with it? How will this look 5 years from now? I don't know.
How could this next 2 year state budget affect tax rates, for Wisconsinites?
That's the outstanding question that we really don't know from Republicans yet. They didn't like the tax cut or the tax credits as Evers had structured them in the budget he introduced to the legislature, geared mostly toward people who are in less than $100,000. Republicans have talked about, cutting taxes across all rates. They're not going to move to a flat tax in this budget that we can tell. They've basically signaled as much. Mm-hmm. but you could see tax cuts for all rates, including the wealthiest residents, potentially. I would expect we'll find that out soon. You know, next week would be kind of my guess on when you find out what their tax cut's going to look like.
Well, Sean and Anya, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Anya Van Wagtendonk is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, and Sean Johnson is Capitol Bureau Chief. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The nonprofit newsroom Wisconsin Watch reviews over 100 of our state's private schools that receive public funding through tuition vouchers, finding 4 out of 10 with policies or statements that appear to target or single out LGBTQ plus students. And this, as Republican lawmakers and Governor Tony Evers strike a deal on legislation that includes increasing per pupil payments to private voucher schools. You can be part of this conversation. Call in with questions, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Phoebe Petrovic is an investigative reporter at Wisconsin Watch. Phoebe, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. So you examined this case where 2 students at Fox Valley Lutheran High School in Appleton, they were nearly expelled because of their possible relationship. Can you describe what happened and take us inside the story?
Yeah, so the way I found out about this actually was from receiving an open records request from DPI, where I received complaints about alleged discrimination at voucher schools. And one of them was super fascinating to me. It was a student writing in on behalf of their peers that, and it said, you know, that there were 2 fantastic athletes at Fox Valley Lutheran who had been found to be in a gay relationship. They were both women or both young women. And were facing disciplinary action. And so I was able to eventually find the 2 women at the center of this, and they were seniors at Fox Valley Lutheran. By all accounts, they were very popular, engaged, really successful, engaged students, who one of them was on the cheerleading team, another was like on the homecoming court, both great athletes. And somehow the school found out that they were in a relationship, or suspected they were in a relationship. The 2 young women don't know exactly how the administration caught wind of it, because they were very careful. But they were called into separate meetings with the dean, where they were, you know, told the school policy that they could face expulsion. And ultimately, instead, the administrators decided that they could remain in the school and graduate, but they had to agree to several conditions, going to a pastor, breaking up, and they weren't allowed to attend sort of public-facing external events. Mm-hmm.
So greatly impacting their experience in high school. I wonder, mm-hmm. you know, it was other students, their classmates, who had reached out to the governor on their behalf, as you write. And how did these seniors, protest, in which I found really fascinating? How did their classmates respond?
Yeah, so in speaking with one of the students who experienced this, she said that what a friend of hers had posted on Snapchat, I believe, the day that this all happened, saying, you know, let's wear our rainbow class shirts for the next day to celebrate spring. And in her telling, this was sort of a covert way of suggesting, that we should have solidarity for our friends and wear these rainbow pride shirts. And so quite a few students were wearing those shirts the next day in their friend group who seemed to be in the know. And then following that, in the girls' telling, they were called into a meeting with administrators yet again, where, you know, they faced even more sanctions.
Pulling back for a moment, you found private schools with discriminatory policies across the state that accept taxpayer-funded vouchers. Why are these schools able to operate with discriminatory policies?
Because the law allows them to do so. So I spoke with a number of activists and legal scholars who said that this discrimination or exclusion is a feature of the voucher system, not a bug of the voucher system. And so Wisconsin state law does not place any requirements on exclusion or inclusion of students who are LGBTQ or students who have disabilities at voucher schools. The discrimination law in Wisconsin pertaining to voucher schools and private schools only is limited to race, creed, color, national origin, things like that. It doesn't touch LGBTQ status or disability status. And then when it comes to LGBTQ versus disability, there are sort of separate federal laws that apply, but the overwhelming effect of this is that if you are a religious school, which 95% of the voucher schools, according to our calculation in Wisconsin, are, you are exempt from non-discrimination laws that would require you to fully incorporate LGBTQ students or students with disabilities.
What about federal protections on gender identity or disabilities applying to these schools? I mean, what about Title IX here? Can it not touch these schools?
Title IX has a exemption for religious belief, and you don't need to claim that with the federal government. You can just say this doesn't align with our religious tenets, and so we're not going to accommodate. And as I said, 95% of these schools are religious schools, so that ends up being, 95% of them in Wisconsin, of these voucher schools, are able to claim a religious exemption from Title IX. And so federal laws don't apply. This is where the state could come in and pass a law saying you can't discriminate against LGBTQ students who are enrolled in voucher schools. And the state has declined to do so.
Talking about voucher schools with Wisconsin Watch investigative reporter Phoebe Petrovic, you can join in on this reporting. You can join in with your experiences, your questions, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Phoebe, you attempted to talk with representatives at private schools to hear their side, to understand these policies that you pored over in their documents. Were you able to speak with anyone?
I wasn't. And that was really disappointing. You know, we spent a lot of work or a lot of time poring over these statements of faith, these policies, these handbooks. And I really wanted to hear, you know, how these schools and religious leaders rationalized this conduct. If there was something that I was missing here, you know, hoping to hear about their perspective. So none of the schools, associations, churches, or pro-voucher organizations that I contacted granted an interview. None of them agreed to answer questions, just written over email. Some gave limited statements that didn't reference our questions, in substance. Most actually didn't respond to me. Some of them blocked my email so that I couldn't actually contact them by email anymore, and hung up on the phone with me when I called to inquire about that or tried to set up an interview.
Why? Why do you think that was the response?
I mean, I can't speculate onto that, but I do find it very fascinating that, you know, we heard from some organizations after the fact who were very upset that the story did not include their perspective, either conservative or right-wing educational or organizations that are supportive of education, privatization, and voucher schools. And I had tried to contact those very organizations directly to ask for their perspective before the story came out, and they ignored my calls and my emails, and instead after the fact, were angry that the story did not reflect their perspective that they had declined to give. So I can't speculate as to why, but I did find that very striking, to say the least.
Department of Public Instruction, DPI, also declined to weigh in, even when you presented them with, like, possible violations of state law that had been uncovered by Wisconsin Watch, by your newsroom. Why wouldn't DPI respond to even specific scenarios?
Yeah, well, I will say that DPI was pretty forthcoming with saying on the record that the current administration, at least, does not support this regime, that they would much prefer to be able to have the authority to step in and on the behalf of students who are LGBTQ or disabled who are facing discrimination once enrolled in voucher schools. But, you know, throughout my reporting, this came up with activists, legal scholars, and DPI itself. You know, they are in a tough spot where any perceived toe stepping out of line could trigger a lawsuit. And the rulemaking regime in Wisconsin is such that unless the law is explicit in saying you as a state agency have the power to prevent this, they can't they can't implement a rule to grant themselves that authority. And so they were really wary about weighing in on individual cases, basically out of fear of a lawsuit, more than anything else.
This then takes us back to the situation at Fox Valley Lutheran High School that was brought to the attention of Governor Evers and the State Department of Public Instruction. What ultimately was the response of these authorities?
Yeah, the response was, you know, thank you so much for contacting us. I'm really sorry, but we can't do anything. And they referred this student who wrote in to, you know, saying, they said you could contact your school board and see if they will do anything, or you could contact advocacy organizations to see if there's a private attorney who might take this case. But really what it comes down to is DPI does not have the authority to protect or intervene against discrimination for LGBTQ or disabled students who are enrolled in voucher schools. They do have the statutory authority to say that you cannot discriminate against these classes in admissions. But once a student is enrolled, school policies apply. And that's where DPI came up again and again saying, if these are enrolled students, we can't do anything.
Phoebe Petrovic is an investigative reporter for Wisconsin Watch, recently publishing an investigation into taxpayer-funded voucher schools discriminating against LGBTQ plus students and students with disabilities. You can join in at any point. Call in with a question or a comment, 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The nonprofit journalism organization Wisconsin Watch, they investigate the policies of private voucher schools toward LGBTQ plus students and find discriminatory practices. And this as Republican legislative leaders strike a deal with Governor Tony Evers that involves sending more public dollars to private voucher schools. Join in, voice your questions, share thoughts, 800-642-1234. Wisconsin Watch investigative reporter Phoebe Petrovic is here. Let's take a call now. Jimmy in Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy. What would you like to ask? Good morning.
Well, there was a segment last week on this, the expansion of the voucher program. And as I understand, the object is to allow folks that don't think their schools, public schools, doing a good job to you know, send their kids to a voucher program, and maybe the only voucher school in the area is a parochial school. So let's say you're Muslim and you want your child to have a better education. Can they, in the handbook, does it allow them to opt out of any religious teaching or requirement to go to church?
Jimmy, thank you. Did you see any of that in these materials that you reviewed, Phoebe?
Yeah, so that is part of the state law that students are, at the family's request, they should be allowed to exempt themselves from or opt out of religious instruction or church-related activities. There are problems with that sometimes when the rubber meets the road, or actually in practice, it can be sometimes difficult. So we obtained documents from DPI where church leaders were writing in to the agency talking about potentially joining the voucher program. And they said, you know, faith is imbued or suffused throughout our curriculum. So it's really difficult to opt out from our faith teachings because we really put it in everything that we do, and asking sort of how to navigate that. And, you know, DPI, in my reporter opinion, gave sort of limited answers because they have to go by what the book says or what the law says. In theory, legally, there is a right to opt out of religious instruction. In practice, that can be more difficult. And there also is a problem when, you know, if a parent wants a student to attend religious education, and the student themselves doesn't. So we had that in the case of Nat Worth, who we profiled, who was at Sheboygan Lutheran, and he tried to opt out of religious instruction in his senior year because the class, in his telling, the teacher made offensive remarks, and it was challenging for him emotionally and not so much intellectually. And he wasn't able to opt out of that and didn't actually realize it was his legal right to do so until after he had graduated.
Jimmy, thank you for that question. And I think it is entree into this question for you to clarify how a voucher school is different from a public school or a charter school. Also noting here that the recent budget deal by leaders in the state capitol would raise per pupil funding at private voucher schools by about $1,100 for students in grades K through 8 and by nearly $3,000 for students in high school. Can you explain the, you know, some of the distinctions here, Phoebe?
Sure. So, a voucher school, and we went with that particular term, voucher school, for a very specific reason, which is that folks who are in favor of school privatization or expansion, they use the term school choice. Mm-hmm. But that can mean a bunch of different things. So my colleague Mario Caron reported on open enrollment, which is a form of school choice where students who can go to other public schools. So we chose voucher because that is very specific. So voucher schools are private schools. They might be parochial. 95% of them are in Wisconsin, but not entirely. And they receive public subsidization through tuition vouchers, which, you know, go directly to the school, though people who support them will say, you know, it's the parents deciding it, the parents get it, but the parents decide where they want their children to go. And then the state gives the schools those state tax dollars directly in the form of a tuition voucher. Charter schools are a different beast entirely, which, to be honest, I don't want to give you wrong information. Mm-hmm. But we were specific on looking at private schools that receive public funding. And a lot of the pushback that we received was, well, you know, private schools can do whatever they want. And we weren't weighing in on private schools that are just solely private, but we were looking at private schools that receive public funding. 32 of them in Wisconsin have 100% of their student body on vouchers, which one education scholar calls private in name only. And 1/5 of the voucher schools in Wisconsin have 90% or more of their student bodies on vouchers. So these are private schools who can act entirely differently or contrary to ways that would be legal for a public school to act, but are significantly publicly subsidized.
I want to move into disabilities, the area of disabilities. Your reporting found these voucher schools can discriminate against students with disabilities. Is there evidence that voucher schools are actually doing this?
So, yeah, I mean, after the fact, we received quite a few tips from after the story was published, received quite a few tips from families alleging that this had happened to them in voucher schools and that they were taken by surprise. You know, way back in 2011, Disability Rights Wisconsin and the ACLU complained to the federal DOJ alleging discrimination in Milwaukee public schools, or the Milwaukee Choice Program, the Milwaukee Voucher Program. And ultimately, after a couple of years, the Fed said, yeah, you know, DPI needs to do more to prohibit, to prevent discrimination because we're concerned. And DPI came back and said, we would love to, but we legally don't have the authority to do so under state law. And, you know, they were sort of at an impasse, and that's sort of the way that it is now. And so I spoke with a disability rights advocate who fields calls from parents all across the state who have their children enrolled in voucher schools and are surprised when the voucher school comes back and says, you know what, we just, your child is too disruptive, or we don't, you know, we can't accommodate their needs without significant change. And so we'd like you to find someplace else to go.
We're talking about voucher schools with Wisconsin Watch investigative reporter Phoebe Petrovic. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Phoebe, we heard from Mike in St. Lawrence called and wants to know if a portion of the voucher payment also goes to the church that is affiliated or connected to the school.
That is a great question that I do not know the answer to, and I apologize, but that's something to look into for sure.
And, you know, what are limits of state laws here? Because, you know, you did say that lawmakers had made some attempts to advance legislation that would stop discrimination of LGBTQ plus students or students with disabilities at voucher schools. What has come of that?
Nothing has come of that. Yeah. So I spoke with the Legislative Reference Bureau, who's great, and asked them to sort of try to pull up any attempts to close, I don't want to say close the loophole, but change this, what some people have called a feature of the voucher system. So to prohibit discrimination against enrolled LGBTQ plus or disabled students. And there were three attempts, I want to say from 2007 to 2015, and they all died in committee. So they never got a floor vote. And, you know, I should say too, I think it's really important when we talk about this voucher program to keep in mind that this is a program that has only ever been implemented in Wisconsin and expanded in Wisconsin through, by expanded, I mean added additional programs. It's only been through larger financial bills like the budget or the mini budget. Lawmakers have not had the chance to weigh in individually on whether or not they supported this particular program with all of its qualities, some of them being discrimination.
Phoebe, thank you for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Phoebe Petrovic is an investigative reporter at Wisconsin Watch, and we have a link to the investigation at WPR.org/mornings. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.